confidants, my inquisitive, therapeutic, mind-altering and betterment confidants. Welcome to another episode of Confidently Insecure, the podcast where we are absolutely sure we don't know everything. I am your host, Kelsey Darrah. And this episode, I am so excited for, because you guys have been following my journey with wellness, mental health, and a little bit of teeny weeny fungi here and there. And now we have a real expert live with us. We've got Kelsey Ramsden. You were dubbed one of Canada's top female entrepreneurs. And more importantly, you are the CEO of MindCure. Thank you so much for being here, Kelsey.
I am stoked to be here, Kelsey. This is going to be, thankfully our voices sound a little bit different, or the listener will be like, which Kelsey are we dealing with here? So
welcome to everyone. Both smart and on it.
That's right.
And boss. And it just comes with the territory of being Kelsey,
this
right?
This is kind of the name. I mean, yeah. What was that? What else was going to happen? Nothing.
Exactly. Okay. First question. What is MindCure?
Great question. So MindCure is a mental health company. So we have really two divisions. One is where we take psychedelic drugs and we research them. And we do that by indication. And I'm sure we'll talk a little bit about that. We have a couple of programs. One is Ibogaine and the other is called the Desire Project. And then the other part of our business is developing AI-backed, passively monitoring technology that helps psychedelic therapy be rolled out at scale so that individuals can track their own process in their healing journey and really be what I like to call developmental wealth, and be a colleague in their own care, which is really what we're after when we talk about psychedelic healing, is, you know, that we're an integral part of our own healing. And so that's what MindCure is all about. And we've been around for about, I'm going to say, just shy of 2 years.
Wow. New company.
Pretty new. And we're traded on the stock exchanges in Canada and the States, which is exciting because it means to me that people are a lot more open to psychedelics. And I think people typically thought, so when we have regulatory approvals and when the traders are trading, and we have this kind of market acceptance, it's not only interesting on the wellness side, obviously, but interesting culturally that you can invest in psychedelic companies now. And 2 years ago, you could not do that. That was not a thing. So it's exciting. No. Like, we are in the revolution. It's great.
Amazing. And I want to know what brought you personally into this space.
Yeah, good question. So I did the thing I think I feel like a lot of us think we're meant to do, which is climb the mountaintop, jump the hoops, collect the gold coins, tick the boxes, whatever the deal, right? And I did that. I scaled some businesses. I got an MBA. I won a lot of awards. I have a wall full of things going on. The paperwork says I'm important and a good person. And gosh darn it. I've worked hard. Right. And then I got to the mountaintop, as it were, and I looked around and I was like, you know, I was supposed to feel whole when I got here. This was the part where I was enoughedness and better and knowing and all of that. And I wasn't. I mean, sure, I'd learned a few things along the way, and there's a lot of things that got easier by virtue of some success. But at my soul level, I would say I wasn't any better off for having had done all of the things I thought I was meant to do to get me to this promised land of wellness. So, and, you know, I've been in therapy forever. So I had done all the therapy, you know, typical therapy. And had a stint with postpartum depression with a psychiatrist. I've been medicated. I've been not. I've been all the things. And of course, you know, society looks at my success and is like, that girl's got it all together. And I think this is one of these kind of permission points to allow people to be invited to this thought that, you know, some of the people, and you hear this anecdotally, but some of the people who seem like they have it most together are the people who have it the least together. It just happens to be that the things they have together, society approves of.
Wow.
You know, so that was me. And then I just got to a place where I was like, you know, you have one ride on the blue marble. I'm not sure this is how I should spend it. Right. So I started by luck of life, was dealt a great friend who was just like on the floor of my best high school friend at uni, and she wound up being folded into our mix of friends. And now she's a doctor and was doing research with psychedelic medicine. Mm. And she said, Kelsey, you know, I know you did a few mushrooms at uni. Maybe you would be open to this kind of therapy. So I started reading research papers and looking into what was coming out of Johns Hopkins and what MAPS are doing and all these kind of things. Because by this point, I'm like a 40-year-old mother of three children with all these businesses. And like, people like me don't do drugs, in air quotes. Sure. I don't know if you got that part, right?
Yeah, for sure.
And so I felt like, you know, I needed to know, and these are different dosages. When we're talking about psychedelic assisted psychotherapy, just for the, you know, for the listeners who may not be totally up to speed with what we're talking about, there's this notion of microdosing that I think is like culturally pretty popular. Mm-hmm. And people understand we're talking about, like, you know, and again, all asterisks, I'm not giving medical advice, blah, 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 blah.
Sure.
But, you know, we're talking about 0.1 grams or a tenth of a gram if we're talking about a microdose of psilocybin, this is formerly known as magic mushrooms. Mm-hmm. But when we're talking about therapeutic doses, we could be talking upwards of like 5 grams. Mm-hmm. And anyone who has purposefully or accidentally taken 5 grams of mushrooms will tell you that it's quite a different experience. And so I wanted to be assured that if I go and do a therapeutic dose of psilocybin, I'm going to be able to show up for work and my family and all of my responsibilities and all these people who work for me and that I'm responsible for providing wages for it, you know. And turns out the research is good. So I became a patient. I became a patient of psychedelic assisted psychotherapy just about 5 years ago, I suppose now. And I know that's a bit of a long answer to share how I came here, but I think it's important that people hear, you know, a bit of a journey and a bit of an understanding of there is research that exists. There's more to be done. It's not only fringe people who are doing psychedelic therapy. It's like typical, you know, I'm a 45-year-old Canadian mother of three, blah, 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 you know. But there is suffering at all ages and stages and cultures. And I think psychedelics can be of service for a lot of those people. And so that's why I decided I would not do the businesses I had started and founded at Scaled. And I retired after doing some of the work. And then when the capital markets were coming together to start funding research, I thought I do okay at founding and scaling and starting businesses and delivering things. And I know a fair number of people in the psychedelics world. So I'd like to be of service and change some lives. So here we are.
Wow. Wow. I mean, amazing answer. First of all, I thank you for sharing such a personal connection to how you got into this work and so much gold in your answer, just about what the impact we're going to leave behind on this earth is. Mm. And it's great when you're doing it for yourself, but that only lasts for so long. And I think we come to find that the community aspect of healing and the power and knowledge to pass that on to someone else is so amazing. And you guys are doing it through something that a lot of people are afraid of, thanks to Timothy Leary and his shenanigans.
Yep.
But you talked a little bit about this, about how the research has been there for so long and it's been so overshadowed. I mean, all of the psychedelics from LSD to mescaline, MDMA, all of that came out of clinical trials and studies for therapeutic assisted, psychedelic assisted therapies. And what are we doing, or what exactly is MindCure doing to sort of break that stigma, or maybe show people that this is something that, like you mentioned, your mom could do?
Calling all mothers. So I think there's kind of like, I always feel like it's important to give a little bit of grace. So, and I'm on your team with Tim Leary. Like, Man, you were on the path and you kind of pulled a hard left on the deal, and
Yeah.
things didn't work out.
No.
But, you know, Godspeed for the likes of him and some of the other folks, Ram Dass, some of the other folks who kind of took up the movement. We were invited into the possibility of psychedelic medicine. And so there was a
Right.
period of time where there was a lot of research being done. And by, you know, virtue of a few bad actors, and again, culture. Right? We think about culture and the impact that that has. And so at the time, this notion of the war, like even prior to the war on drugs under Reagan, but thinking back to the notions of the times of like psychedelics is tune in, turn on, and drop out, and every society is
Yeah.
going to fall apart.
Right.
I get it. If that was your
Yeah.
fundamental belief, I don't think that people in the morning wake up and say, I'd really like to screw up the future. Right? It was just enough
Right.
people who had the fundamental belief that what psychedelics could do was so disruptive to society that they feared it. And they weren't really willing to play out the research to determine how can we appropriately deploy these medicines in a way that's meaningful. They just went, holy shit, this is, sorry if you're not allowed swearing on your show,
Oh
I
no,
just
you very
like,
much can. You
okay.
very much can.
And so, you know, pump the brakes. And so that's what happened. So I, you know, so I do want to provide a little bit of grace to like the origin, I think, was meant to be good. And the
Yes.
timing and culture was just a misalignment. And now that we have the opportunity to reintroduce this work, I think the timing and culture is open to a shift in how we approach mental health issues. And when we talk about mental health, I want to invite the listener to not only think about, you know, depression, anxiety, PTSD, but I want them to think about addiction. I want them to think about lack of sexual desire, which is one of the programs we're running. I want them to think about the full experience of being human. And all of those things that kind of revolve and root between our ears that are the stick handlers of that human experience. And so psychedelics can be applied, we think, to a multiplicity of these things, which aren't only depression, anxiety, PTSD, but those three will be materially helped. But there are a lot of people suffering with a lot of things. The opiate crisis is a pretty material one at the moment, where ibogaine is a smash hit. So kind of painting this picture and bringing us up to today, and what's happening is we have regulatory interest. The FDA is allowing psychedelic trials to advance. The Canadian government is doing things called Section 56 exemptions, where patients are applying for legal access to psychedelics in the paradigm of care. So if you're an end-of-life patient, you can apply for access to psilocybin. And although at the same time, don't we have the culture current where the FDA has also just scheduled three drugs that are not addictive, but are psychoactive? So we have this kind of current that's both like a headwind and a tailwind. And the way to address it, which is what we're doing and other psychedelics companies, a few of us in the space, clinical research. Like when you get down to the pragmatic, hard fact of it, if you proof it scientifically and you show that there's a way to safely deploy these medicines with consistent outcomes that help people, there isn't much that can be done to say no.
You
And
can't
that's why
say
I
no to the
believe that,
science.
you know, you can't say no to the science. And that's why I believe that 10 years from now, this mental health arena is going to look very different from what it looks like today, you know.
And you bring up a good point of this is now a business, right? I on the podcast here, we've talked to some underground healers. I live in Los Angeles, so we've spoke to oh gosh, what's the ketamine? It's running my mind right now. Anyways, some ketamine therapy clinics. And these places are gorgeous. They're like you go to a wellness spa, and it's feels very safe because you're not in some guy's basement in high school, with no with no
Humans is
supervision
best
around.
okay. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. This is a business now, and I think what I fear as a patient is what does that look like once you get let's say, I'm making air quotes to encapsulate it all, but when big pharma gets involved or when government gets involved in my mental health, how is that alike or dissimilar from the therapy and mental health access that we have now?
Yeah, I mean, this is a great question. So there's a lot of ways this one goes.
Yeah, that's a long one.
This is, well, there's pros and cons to everything, isn't there? So this idea of big pharma is one that I think, you know, there's pros and cons. So big pharma gave us antibiotics. I'm like generally a thumbs up on that.
Thank you, big pharma, for that.
You know, yeah, Godspeed. Well played. You know, big pharma has given us some of the greatest advances, right? But at the same time, big pharma has allowed some things that are really lucrative to get away from them, like Oxy, as an example. You know, the opiate crisis is pretty material, and it was, in my opinion, propagated on greed. And what started out as, you know, a good solution, it just got away from them. And then wasn't stopped because, geez, these numbers are looking pretty okay.
Yeah.
So I think, so I think when we talk about this kind of fear of big pharma, I get it. And also, anybody who's done 5 grams of mushrooms knows you're not going to do it every Friday night.
No.
You're not going to do it. You are just simply not. This is it. What we're talking about is something very different than those types of medications. And with psychedelics, we're not talking, for the most part, about giving it to a patient in perpetuity. We're actually kind of turning the big pharma model on its head and saying, you know what, instead of drugging you forever, a little bit every day, what about we got to the root of a thing instead of treating the symptoms? What about we actually get into your PTSD so that after a 12-week series of treatments, you no longer have PTSD. How about that? So I think it's a bit of both. It's a bit of this side that is, yes, big pharma will come and they will own us all. Like, that's just the reality of commerce. If there's enough money to be made in psychedelia, we will all be bought and they will own all these drugs. The flip side of that, though, is that I believe that consumerism and demand and education on the part of the individual will demand that those drugs are accessible. If we think about people who have someone in their family who is an addict, and they can go on methadone forever, which has a whole bunch of side effects, or they can do Ibogaine for a session. I'm pretty sure that those people will happily demand access to Ibogaine because the research is there and the drugs are available. So it is going to be a culturally driven transformation of how we access healthcare. And I am so excited for that piece where we take ownership of our own mental health and say, you know what? I'm not going to do the drugs every single day. I would rather go another route. And this word psychedelics has a lot of baggage, but if we could call them neuroplastogens, how would that suit you?
Oh, I love that. That's good. Yeah.
But that's also what it is, you know? And so I think it's part of an interesting conversation that involves all of these facets of culture and commerce and timing and, but I mean, you're in LA. People on the coast are generally pretty like, yeah, let's try that. Let's see what's on the front of things.
Yeah.
I'm sure that you've heard a lot about people trying psychedelic medicine for mental health.
Tons. Yeah. It's, and to know too, that there's even like ketamine clinics in the Midwest. That's to me a huge step in the right direction. I want to put my tinfoil hat on for just a second and ask.
Let's do it.
I'm like, this is not me, but I've got to ask just because I've been in the mental health game for a very long time. If these neuroplastogens?
Neuroplastogen. Yeah.
I love that. If these neuroplastogens are I'm going to use the word cure. I don't often, but are curing us of some of our suffering. Mm. And the government gets involved. And now I'm talking American. I know you're Canadian.
Yeah. We have government, though. They can stick their fingers.
You guys have
and
like the
too.
Crown, and you sound much more sophisticated about it.
Yes.
Do they want us to have something that you only need to take once every year, once every quarter, or, you know, depending on, do they want us to not be taking the drugs that they've developed and worked on so hard to put in our lives?
Yeah. So
tinfoil hat.
No, I dig it. Tinfoil hats all day, man. I'm on your team. Let's do it. Because you do have to go to the extremes to really look at a situation. I've always appreciated this. Like, I'm an open skeptic. I always start with yes, but then tell me for like, exactly, let's parse this out. So I think this is where we see government and commerce ultimately being at odds. So the cost of mental health care to our economy, not to the drug providers or the, but to the insurers. So if you go to a job and you're on short-term disability, that costs them a lot of money.
Yeah.
If you opt out of the workforce because you can't keep it together, that costs them a lot of money. If you're an addict, that societally costs a lot of money. Your local, like, healthcare drop-in, whatever the case, the municipal government is cleaning up needles, like, the societal, economic, commercial cost of mental health challenges. I believe has got to this tipping point where we can't just like put on our Sunday best and hide it anymore. We are at a place where the net cost to society is so great that this idea of being able to, like, to your point, not medicate us, not give us the opportunity for the cure, if this is what we're, where we may prove to be. I don't think the net benefit to the government or drug companies is actually there. All drug companies will do is just boost the cost of this stuff. They'll say, okay, cool.
Right.
So your methadone was going to be $50,000 for a 10-month for a 1-year term. If this guy's going to get off it, then the cost of the insurance company is going to be X, Y, Z. They will just adapt their math because the government and society can't actually function without people showing up to work. They can't function without people, you know, all the teachers who've gone through COVID and having to teach from home, all the frontline healthcare workers who, like, they're cracking, and rightfully so.
Yeah,
they got to get those people back up on their feet and in the game. And so I think I appreciate the tinfoil hat, and I do like to put it on to go, yeah, okay, could we do all this research and then for naught? But I do think that, you know, society as it sits today will find this like tipping point of benefit and go, yeah, it just costs too much to not let this stuff out of the bag. Okay, let's do it. But let's do it safely. Let's not have MDMA slip out the back door and Tim Leary it, and then we have, you know, some folks
round
running
two.
Around naked in the streets. Round two. Let's not do that.
Yeah. I mean, you bring up a good point then, is how do we keep treatment like this affordable and inclusive to the people who arguably need it most and have least access to it right now safely?
Yeah, so this is one of these kind of like challenges of all things early days. So you probably, like, you're a reasonable amount younger than me, but in the early days of flat screen televisions.
I remember those.
Okay. They were like $15,000. Now you can go to Walmart and get one for like $600.
Right.
Or $300. Right?
Yeah.
So this is kind of this is one of the conversations that gets in heated debates around psychedelia within the psychedelic community is, okay, so you're telling me it costs $1,500 or $2,500 to go for a series of ketamine treatments. Mm-hmm. Who can afford that?
Right.
And you know, on the chin, I will take that and say, admittedly, it's early days and insurance doesn't cover it yet. And yes, it is not good and right. But this is how things, new products, new services always roll out. When we are only serving so many people, you just can't spread the cost over that many. Like, it's just, right. Unfortunately, we're in the simplicity of math at the moment.
Yeah.
Once we get adoption, though, once word of mouth is there, once a person says, you know what, my cousin tried XYZ, he was feeling like you, maybe you should go, and we get, you know, bums in seats and people coming through and more people requesting, and then payers start to cover it, and then we start getting that, I think we're in good stead and we do have access. And once we have the scientific work done and the studies behind some of these things so that payers can pay for them, I think we're going to be fine. But in the very short term.
Confidants, my sweet confidants. Quick break to tell you, it is 2022. It is the year of taking care of ourselves. We have all been through it. So you know what I'm here to talk about? BetterHelp. Baby, BetterHelp, my favorite platform, which is an online therapy platform that you can use to get through so many things that are interfering with your happiness. Things like LGBTQIA+ matters, grief, anger, family issues, they got it all. You can be matched with a licensed counselor in under 48 hours and getting therapy started for the new year. Y'all always know I'm saying therapy should be affordable and accessible to everyone, and BetterHelp does just that. My new therapist is teaching me EFT technique, which is called emotional freedom technique. I mean, they are just loaded with knowledge. I'm absolutely obsessed with her, and I do therapy every single week. And I want you to start living a happier life today, which is why you're going to get 10% off of your first month of therapy when you use code CI. That is 10% off your first month when you use code CI by visiting betterhelp.com/CI. And join over 1 million people taking charge of their mental health. Again, that's BetterHelp, HELP.com/CI.
Yeah, anybody who didn't say we have a situation in the short term would be bold-faced lying.
Right.
But that is just the truth. And I don't love it myself.
Sure.
But that's accurate. It's going to be upper middle class people in the very short term who are able to go to their local ketamine spa.
Yeah.
And right.
Yeah.
And do their infusion. And that's just the truth at the moment.
Yeah.
But my great hope is that's not where we're headed, you know?
Right. And those are the people arguably the ones who do make the decisions and laws and have the big bucks are the people that, you know, I see going to these retreats and these spas, if you will. And those are the people whose minds we need to change, not only literally, but, you know, metaphorically as well.
This is a great point. It's very true. And, you know, I'm amongst them. I've been in the place and looked around the room and been like, interesting municipal lawyer, interesting XYZ, interesting physician, practicing surgeon, interesting like high school principal. All right. So you're all in the room. You're going to understand what we're talking about, because this is an experiential thing. It's like, have you ever talked to someone who's gone skydiving and they're like, oh my God, you have to do it. And I'm me going, hell no, like there's zero chance of that ever happening. There is this piece around psychedelic medicine that like people who have had the healing experience in a truly clinically healing way, it's ineffable. It's really hard to explain outside of saying, I know that this can help. And so you know, just the same way you can't describe how it feels to jump out of an airplane.
Yeah.
This is a probably very terrible analogy. We're not talking about jumping out of an airplane, but you
not
know what I'm
scary,
saying.
But it's
this visceral, embodied, purely human, very personal experience that comes and goes in fullness. And
confidants, sober girlies, are you looking to cut back or cut without alcohol this year? Come on, join me and Zach on our sober journeys. Recess Zero Proof craft mocktails are the perfect alcohol replacement. We've recreated the cocktails you know and love, like a lime margarita and a grapefruit paloma, so you can enjoy the flavors and feelings of those cocktails without the booze. That's right, zero proof, zero compromise. Listeners can get 15% off the Recess mocktail sampler at takearecess.com/Kelsey. Each can is lightly sparkling mocktail infused with functional ingredients like so many stress balancing adaptogens made with real fruit and only 25 calories or less. It's a guilt-free way to unwind. Whether you're relaxing after work or hanging out with friends, make Recess mocktails your drink between drinks or, like me, your forever mocktail. I am so obsessed with the ginger lime mule and also the grapefruit paloma. For spring, it's my favorite go-to weekend drink. Get 15% off Recess mocktails now at takearecess.com/Kelsey so you can enjoy your favorite cocktails without the consequences.
Richness, and only you then can take that forward in a way that no one else has that exact same experience as you because it was yours and for you is hard to translate.
Right, right.
To the general population. But the more people who have had that themselves, to your point, who are in these positions, who don't, you know, who go, I get it. Yeah, no, we're good. I get it. It matters. It's good work. It will help people. Let's move this thing along in a way that, we can get the research done and unlock insurance payment. And for things that aren't just PTSD and depression, but for all of these things, like sexual desire. It's an important thing.
I want to talk a little bit about that, There are some things that you guys are doing at MindCure that I haven't heard of in our standard PTSD, anxiety, depression. You know, that's what we always hear, that people are driving to these places for your traditional package of mental health issues, if you will. But you guys are doing some pretty cool different stuff. Can you talk a little bit about the couple projects?
I can talk about, I mean, we talked a little bit about Ibogaine. I think for the listener, the you know, what I would take, the take home is Ibogaine is a psychedelic you don't hear a lot about. It comes from Africa. It comes from a root, and it's a dreamlike state. And it's a buckle up experience. So it is not 4 hours. It can be 16 to 24 hours long.
Oh my goodness.
It's like being in a dream state. So you're able and capable and here, as it were, but you're also in visions and in it, it's quite an interesting, experiential psychedelic. And predominantly to date, it's been targeted at addiction and, and they're actually, there's a whole group of Navy SEALs who, who've been doing work with Ibogaine. There's a, there's some pretty interesting work happening around, brain trauma and underlying addiction is often trauma. So, so that's Ibogaine. So I won't belabor the point. I would just say, if you're curious about, if I will say this, if you're curious about Ibogaine and even a lot of the drugs that we're going to talk about or have talked about, and you're not, you know, maybe didn't like jam on the drug culture in some way, and you're like, what does that actually look like? What do people who do that look like? Or what does that look like being done? There's an amazing show. It's called Hamilton's Pharmacopoeia. And Hamilton Morris is a guy who's on our advisory, and he Hamilton is on our jam. I adore Hamilton because he is an open skeptic. Hamilton,
I bet.
So for people who haven't seen Hamilton's show and don't know who Hamilton is, he does the drugs on the show. And he's a chemist and he's a documentarian. And he will show you and experience them and recount what it's like and also take you to these places. So the Ibogaine, when he goes to Africa and he does like a traditional ceremony, it's really amazing. Anyway, Godspeed to Hamilton, strong lover over here. But so if people are curious and don't, so that's Ibogaine. And then the Desire Project.
Yes.
Was really born out of this, like, you know, sometimes you just get a whiff of a thing and it seems like, why isn't that a thing?
Yes, all the time.
You know, it's like that seems obvious to me and maybe nobody else, but like, what is this? And so for us, the Desire Project was very much that, in that we know that MDMA and MDMA-like drugs put people in a state of openness. They can be embodied. Mm. You get to feel your body. You're also like, you diminish your fight or flight. So you downgrade your default mode network. You can process hard things, et cetera. So kind of came this idea of like, what about, so when we think about desire, important kind of asterisks here, we're not talking about orgasm. So everybody just rushes to orgasm, like the big fireworks show. That's what everybody focuses on. But prior to orgasm, there is arousal. Prior to arousal, there's desire. So desire is between our ears. Arousal is in our body. Orgasm tends to be in our genitals and maybe some other places. But the long story short is, what about helping people who have a history of negative relationships, history of negative sexual experience? What about helping people who have body image issues or lack of self-esteem? Wow. Who have a real problem being open to desire. And desire can be by themselves. Wow. Like, you don't need a partner to have desire.
No.
You know, this whole like culture of that even being true. You know, there's this picture. My grandma passed away when she was 97.
Oh, wow.
And when she died, they had this, you know, that people will have like a wall of pictures of the person.
Sure.
And there's this picture of my grandma. And I don't know how old she is. I can't say, but I'm going to guess she was probably, maybe she's 30. And she's at the beach and she's in one of those old swimsuits, you know, the gals used to wear with kind of like the squarish bottom and like, it's not particularly sexy, but it's a suit. And she's on the sand and she's kind of like, she's in this not necessarily even really sultry position, but she's kind of just like seated with her knees up and her kind of arms behind her, so to speak.
Sure.
And the look on her face is a look I'd never seen from my grandmother, but it was desire.
Wow.
And I think that every woman knows that sense that's like, it's not necessary. We haven't got to sexual. It is just this pure connection to who we are, what we want, and feeling open to exploring it. And did you know that 40% of women in America at some point during their like, you know, premenopausal years, experience a prolonged lack of desire?
I believe it. I do believe it.
I
didn't know it, but I believe it.
I mean, I super believe it. I mean, anybody who has like a wine club or a book club or just like a Friday night with the gals knows, like, we're all nodding. We're like, yeah. No, I know that's true.
They're like, and?
And I know. Well, so 14% of women get actually diagnosed, but that number is increasing because more of us who are potentially considered more youthful are standing up for what we need and want. We're going to our GP and saying, I'm just not feeling it. I used to feel it. It's gone. I don't know what's up, but I need to explore it. And so our Desire Project is targeting those women who know they're desirous of their desire. They want it back. They don't know how or where it went. And sometimes it's even just the 1,000 cuts of being a woman in modern life. And so being able to utilize psychedelics with psychotherapy to explore ourselves and connect to who we are and what we most desire can unlock that. And so that's our Desire Project. That's what we're working on. Getting desire for the ladies.
I'm like in total awe because this is the first time I've ever heard something like I'm stealing all your words, the psychedelia conversation revolves specifically towards women and the treatment for women. And I'm going to get a little like, stereotypical here. I hate this question and love it because I think it's important to address, but like, you're a woman CEO, you're a mom, you're a badass. And I'm sure while you have a lot of those traditionally, making air quotes, stereotypically masculine traits to crush the business, which is still unfortunately felt so masculine, What do you feel like? I know, right? What do you feel like about being a woman makes you unique in this space as a CEO? Like, just even the fact that you have that program, I was like, holy shit. Yeah, I don't think that would have happened with a dude business.
I dig your style.
Run.
I like even how you frame this question. Yeah, I mean, this is my 101. This is the 101 question for Kelsey Rams is like, what's it like to be a woman in? And before I this, I did civil construction and real estate. What are all these men's things? And so I feel you and I read you and I do feel a bit of the ugh, but I also feel the ultimate importance that you feel in that, this is a real question and this is why we ask it. Here's what I think I know. Like to your, you know, confidently, not confident. This is kind of like this, like I'm 99% sure, but I'm open to suggestion. I think that I build teams well. I think that I develop trust well. I think that I'm open to saying what I don't know and listening pretty well. Which can be female traits. I mean, fellas can do that too. But I think my coming into this work and doing what we've done in the time that we've done it is kind of based on some of those feminine things. And I feel like in particular with respect to this field of psychedelia is this like really empathetic understanding for the patient experience and being able to connect to my soul about it and being able to actually say the words connect to my soul about it as a leader is something that typically publicly traded CEOs don't say those words.
Not allowed.
but it's more allowed for women to say that. Like I get a little bit of grace by saying that. So there's a pro con, right? You know, if a fella said that, there'd be some pretty heavy judgment. They're still judging me as a woman, but I get a little bit of grace in that. And to this program, I mean, like again, can a fella come out and say, I want women to have more desire? Probably going to be received a little bit differently than when I come out and say, I want women to have more desire.
Yes.
But what does that say about our culture and that we're going to shame a man who wants women to have more desire? Because that's what we felt inherently in that statement. Do you want women to have more desire? Oh, okay. Of course. Of course they do.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. There must be something disingenuous or something like about that.
Yeah. Creepy maybe behind dude, it. Yeah.
But maybe the dude has a sister or a wife or a friend who's suffered from like really losing their marriage to it, losing their primary relationship, losing themselves to one going, it really isn't you. It is me. I don't know why I'm not in it. And so, I'm pretty sure that it's because I'm a girl that I'm here and I'm able to do this part of this work. And I'm not saying I don't think a fella could do it. But I am, you know, grateful that sometimes having a bra on gives you a, you know, a golden ticket. But sometimes it gives you, you know, lead shoes. And it's just about recognizing where and when those things are applicable. I read recently there's only 5% of the CEOs of publicly traded company are women. And only, I think I'm going to misquote this, but only by a small number, only 15% of those women are under the age of 60.
Wow.
So it's like, you got to grind it till you're basically retired. And they're like, you know, she's giving it a strong go. Let's put her in. She'll be out in 3 years. And, and I feel like to some degree, it's just like it's a really an amazing honor to be the only female CEO of a publicly traded psychedelics company who's doing research.
Wow.
That's awesome.
Yeah, that's huge.
And that provides me the great opportunity to advance programs like this and unabashedly show up and look folks in the eye and say, yeah, I think women's health, women's mental health, and women's sexuality and desire is worth our time. We don't just need Viagra.
No.
We need some other stuff too.
Wow. That's so powerful. No pressure, you know, just, just strange in the world, you know, very cool. I want to get a little I want to narrow in a little bit just for our listeners who maybe wouldn't even know where to start. We've, you know, on this podcast talked a lot about, I won't even get into the microdosing question of it all, but I know messages that I still get every single day are about like, where do I start? How do I know if I'm supposed to do ketamine or psilocybin or, you know, mescaline? Like, where do we even begin? I myself am on the journey. I did try microdosing. I had to get off all my medications in order to try it. I realized that it wasn't, the microdosing part was fine. I just was not ready to be off all my medications. And so got back on everything top of the year. And now I'm looking into the ketamine only because it's the most accessible right here down the street from me. But I'm currently reading How to Change Your Mind by Michael Pollan, which I'm sure you know all about. I'm like, I never in a million trillion years thought I would be someone who says like, I would like to try the LSD. I would like to try the psilocybin. I would love to try MDMA. These are all things that despite being someone who was raised in the party scene has not used and not experienced. Right. So where does someone even start?
Where do we start? Where do we begin? Okay. Well, we begin with, I think where most people begin. Be curious, ask a lot of questions, you know, obviously just the same as any given thing, the World Wide Web, as they call it, has a lot of information. It also has a lot of misinformation. So beyond being curious, be inquisitive with people who have partaken, be inquisitive with friends who may know friends, open conversations. It's not something to be ashamed of. We're not talking about like, you know, we are, and particularly across the states right now, seeing a shift from criminalization to decriminalization, which does not mean it's legal, all clarity, but it does mean what we know is you can go to a dinner party and say, hey, has anybody here heard about microdosing? And invite the potential for a conversation where people who have experienced it might be able to indoctrinate you into where they get it, what they know. I always find those like kind of human connections are a little bit better than the Google, but nonetheless, where you can start is start talking about it, get curious. Then if you're beyond that and you're saying, okay, I'm in, I would say Michael Pollan's book is amazing. Yes. Hamilton's show is pretty, you know, it's full on. You're definitely going to see the all the way dosage. So don't be afraid if you're going to take that in. There's some good podcasts out there, et cetera. You know, so you start doing that. And then if you're looking at what drug, et cetera, really depends on your primary care provider. So if you have a GP who's pretty open-minded, you can talk to your doctor about it. If you maybe don't, you can rock up one of these, rock up like a Canadian phrase, like you call up of these, you can call up one of these ketamine clinics and have a conversation if they are worth their weight. And, you know, there is always this like little beware because some of these, whether it's a retreat center or a ketamine clinic, some of them have well-trained people. They're doing like well-understood protocols. They have great integration practices. And some are folks who did a psychedelic journey 2 weeks ago and it changed their life. And now they opened up a wellness center where they're going to be a sitter and they don't really understand the power of not only the medicines, but what can come up for people and they can't hold you properly if you know, if you're really going for healing. So I'd say then we're looking at just do the typical thing, like ask some questions, make sure they're asking you a lot of questions. But if you're thinking about which drug, ketamine is currently the only legal psychedelic in America. So that's what we know about ketamine. We know that there's a variety of ways to take ketamine. You can do ketamine infusions or can be oral ketamine. There could be ketamine with no therapy offered. So you're just like going to do some ketamine in a room with it and then you leave. There's, so there's all kind of providers. My recommendation, and this is not medical advice, is look for a place that does have some form of therapy alongside it. Because if you stumble across something that, you know, you could use a bit of a guide, it's always helpful to have that on deck. And then if you're thinking further afield and you want to hop on a plane, You now have access to psilocybin over in the Netherlands or in Jamaica, or in some places in Mexico. You have access to ayahuasca, of course, in like Peru. And those are a little bit next level. So you think about like the easiest entry drug, we're talking about MDMA ketamine. Those are pretty low key, you know, one pepper.
Starting points.
On the menu. And then.
Spicy.
You know, you. That's right. And then you get into to the psilocybins and the ayahuascas, and then you're getting into like two, three peppers on the menu. And then you're getting into the like DMTs and the ibogaines, and that's, you know, you're getting like up to the four or five. Some of this stuff will DMT, if people don't know what that is, it's also toad venom, and you can also make it synthetically. Typically it's smoked. And DMT, you can't step around the DMT experience. Like with psilocybin, you can kind of like open your eyes and come in and out if this is getting really kind of shaky. DMT will take you to the mountaintop immediately, and you will be there for a short period of time, but there's no getting around it. So again, I would say, just think about what you want your entry part to be. Think about who you're with and how much experience they have. And think about too, you know, really important part of the conversation that not a lot of people are talking about is like, if you're going for healing at those dosages, it's likely that you will have an experience that is really hard to come home and say to your friend or your roommate or your spouse or whatever. They'll say, how did it go? What was it like? And you'll say, and you'll stare at them for a while. And then maybe you'll say something like, I saw a snake and it came and it took my soul and it became clear. Right. And that's a real experience. It's an experience that I have had. This is my personal experience. That's why I can share it.
Oh my gosh.
That sounds crazy AF, my friend. Like what? A snake came and it took your soul? What?
What?
What does that have to do with anything?
How?
Right. But this idea of having integration or having people who understand what that can mean, that it's not about the snake and it's not about it taking your soul. It's not about whatever. It's about the feeling of the understanding of being seen and allowing for something to change in a way that can be scary. That's what that really was for me. But it's... Right. So having someone, some understanding of what the other side of this, I always call it, you talk to God and come back on a typical Tuesday.
That's brilliant.
Right. That's what this can be like for people. So I would say if you're thinking about it, do not be afraid. Make sure that you have the right people and the right systems and processes around you so that when you do have the moment that unlocks the healing for you, you're able to translate that into something that sticks and it doesn't become just another good time or another something that was like curious, which is also rad. I mean, I'm a huge, I like curiosity.
Sure. Yeah.
But if we're talking about mental health and like long form healing and the promise of what we think psychedelics can bring, and you are curious, I would say those are all of the questions to be asking and a little bit of a spice level on the different drugs. So don't go from like having smoked a cigarette at a wedding one time to go and take DMT. I think
that that is advice that I could stand by support one. Yes. Yeah. And also Kelsey, thank you for breaking that down. I know you're like the CEO of a booming business, and to get into like that little nitty gritty conversation of just even where to begin, I appreciate so deeply because it's part of the job that maybe you don't focus on every single day, but that people like us and the listeners need to hear from someone who is doing, you know, the deals and the books, if you will, and writing the checks. Cause that it just makes me, it solidifies and validates the process so much that makes me trust in the future of it too. So I guess now that we're wrapping up here, what is the future of Mind Cure and how can the listeners, you know, follow along or get involved?
Yeah, great. So let's start with desire because that's fun. If a listener was listening to us jam about that and they were thinking, that's me, or that's my sister, that's my bestie from uni, or whatever the case, we're calling it the Desire Project because it's a project that's not just about drug research. It's about listening and hearing and those kind of stories. So I'd say email or Insta or whatever, Insta. Hit us up and say, hey, I'm a person who's curious. Maybe I want to be considered for the clinical trial. Maybe I just want to share with you my story so that you really get what it means for a person to go through this. Like, it's important for us to listen. Wow. So, okay. So that's our way. I would say secondarily, if you're just like generally curious about psychedelia and the practice of it and learning about the drugs and all that kind of thing, you can also just simply do the old follow. Like, our team does do an exceptional job of sharing and informing and being really thoughtful about that. I think it's big part time. Of our work and it's important to me. And then I would say, you know, where is MindCure in 3-5 years? We're building this technology platform, which we didn't spend a lot of time talking about, but it's okay. It's okay. I'll do it really quickly. That, like, we believe that we can build the thing that unifies mental health care in a way that becomes the common practice. If you go in, you're going to expect to be able to be at your option, passively biometrically monitored in a way that you are promoted experiences that are proven to help you based on how you respond. And you can journal and it can natural language process and track your real sentiment. And AI-driven music, where if you want to take your experience and take it from tension to calm, it can tell how your own body is responding and is going to feed you music based on where you want to change your experience, not only while you're doing psychedelics, but just on a typical Tuesday. And we think that, we think, you know, we can be that. So we're building out this tech product. So I would say, that's where we'll be in 5 years' time, I think, is, you know, when people go for therapy, not only psychedelic therapy, but general therapy, when they say you should meditate and do breath work and journal and all these things, and most of us go out and do like a third of it and don't really know why we're doing it, what part of it's helping us. We're building the tech that's going to do that. And so that's pretty rad. And I mean, if you're an investor, you can invest in the space, not only us, but there's others. And I know that most other CEOs be like, invest in me. invest in me too. But also, I think it's a whole category. And so just the same way as, like, you go and you explore things, you can learn a lot about where the industry is going by seeing what we're all doing out here and the different things that we're advancing in. So that's how I would say, like, follow along. We as a society, it's not just MindCure. It's people listening to this, having an open mind and going, I'm curious about that. I'm going to read about that. I'm listening to this. I, like, Kelsey brought Kelsey on the show to talk about this. And I'd say that any part of that, you know, when I wake up at 2 a.m. you know, sometimes being a CEO is like a bit of work, and I'm thinking about a challenge, and it sounds like stereotypical, but I have to say, for me at the moment, and since we started, it's true. It's that, like, I think about the person that I know from high school who took his life in an overdose. And I think about my own uncle who suffered from depression severely enough that he's not with us. And I think about the real people that my little problem, right? Even if it feels big at the moment, like, again, back to this, we have one trip on the Blue Marble in space. Are you serious right now? And we have this opportunity to help people really germanely live their one life better. I would say just follow along, folks. You know, I think it's going to change. I think it's going to change a lot for a lot of people.
Wow. Well, geez, Kelsey Ramden, CEO, MindCure. You're just an absolute badass. I am so excited to keep following not only you, but the business. And I appreciate you so deeply for coming on and sharing your truth in your business. And thank you so much.
Well, thank you for having me. I mean, I think the excellence just comes in the name. So all of the things back to you. And if all of your listeners could see all of the things, all of the time in every format that this gets produced in, I would say, like, I appreciate people who come through their face, and this sounds terrible, but your animation and conversation shows me that you genuinely care about these things. You genuinely care about the people who are listening. And I do a lot of this stuff. And so I'll just share with you that I appreciate being here genuinely.
You're right. It is in the name. The Kelseys were just on another level. All right, Kelsey, thank you so much. Confidants, don't forget to check out the links below. Obviously, everything about Mind Care will be there. And we will see you next week.